Greetings, salutations, and positive vibrations. Welcome to the world-class football podcast, Off the Post. I am your host, football journalist Nick Maitland, and thank you all for being here. Today I have as my guest someone who really needs no introduction, but I shall accord him an introduction anyway. He's a former player, a former captain, former coach, technical advisor, commentator, over 100 appearances for the Barbados football team. An esteemed welcome to Mr. Keith Grell Griffith. Hello, sir. How are you doing, man?
Blessings and good evening. Thank you, Maitland, for having me as your special guest. I feel honored to be able to chat with you because you are also a top analyst, and I look forward to having endless conversations with you with football in Barbados and worldwide.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email e-paper support at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle, St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
Thank you very much for your kind words as well. And coming from you, that is a great compliment. So thank you very much, sir. And of course, we normally have football conversations. We normally have discussions, but this is the first time we will allow the general public to be privy of those conversations and get a sense of your immense wisdom and experience on some of these issues as some of the issues that we will face as a footballing community here in Barbados. And the first one, of course, that has been on everyone's lips for the past month or so is that dreaded result in the CONCACAF Gold Cup qualifying round, 8-1, losing to Bermuda. And lots of persons have had their opinion on it, but I wanted to ask you, Keith, specifically from this result, how do we move on? Where do we go from here? What is next for the Barbados Tridents?
Well, to be honest, Maitland, I felt really hurt that Bermuda could beat us by 8-1. I won't be critical of no coach, no president, anything like that. But surely, I anticipated that it would have been a competitive game with Barbados coming out victorious in the end. Ironically enough, we have played Bermuda a number of times, and the games have always been competitive. But to lose 8-1 to Bermuda, like I said, I was very, very disappointed. Because in general, from way back when, Barbados have always been strong in defense, and when we are playing CFU teams, we have always been able to play extremely well, and 8-1 to me was a shocker.
This has been seen as a problem for many years, the fact that we do not have, first of all, professional players, and our amateur players are playing against professional or semi-professional players. Having semi-professional football, will it improve the results of the national team? I know that we had semi-professional football in Barbados as well. You were a part of that. Tell me about semi-professional football in the region, in Barbados, and what benefit did it have on the national team at the time?
With God's blessing, I was the coach of Asian superstars. And persons like Daisy Clark, etc., etc., Adrian Hall, they were all in the squad, Philip Blackgrove, Air Sealy, and they played very well. And overall in the Caribbean, you had a chance to travel, you got a good little stipend, and the gentleman who was in charge of Asian Superstars was a gentleman by the name of former President Lyle Austin. And everyone was happy with it. It eventually died out. Ironically enough, the present president, Mr. Randy Harris, he was the manager, and like I said earlier, I was the coach. So anything that can bring professional football back to the Caribbean would be a blessing. Because the problem is, Maitland, when we go to play in like World Cup qualifiers or the Nation League qualifiers to reach the Gold Cup, playing against those teams, Mexico and USA, etc., etc., Costa Rica, they all have their professionals. So if we can have some semi-professionals along with the players who have come back from England mainly to assist us, then I'm certain not only the fans will be happy, but the players would improve, and probably we will see some local players at the moment gaining contracts worldwide.
Can we have semi-professional football as a reality within the next 5 years? How can we make that happen? I know we have to get investment from the private sector as well, but do you think FIFA can do a little bit more?
Yes, but FC Caribbean is supposed to go forward and have semi-professional league. They will have to reach out and get some sponsorship as quickly as possible. Again, I was blessed by God to coach Joe Public of Trinidad and Tobago when Mr. Jack Warner was in charge. And that was a professional setup where he had players in Joe Public from Trinidad, Jamaica, St. Lucia, etc., etc. And Joe Public did very well because Joe Public were able to reach the group stage, and then they created history. They went to America and they defeated the American champions 2-1 at home in Trinidad, and then 4-0 in America. And they went on to play very well against the Mexican champions, and they're the only team, to the best of my knowledge, that have ever won a match in Mexico, beating the Mexican champions by 1-0. So the door is there. It just needs to be unlocked again, and hopefully by that time, Barbados would have very, very good chance of having semi-professional football here.
But would it have been nice to have players, even in the 60s and 70s, to have players being paid wages to play football? Do you think we'd be a little further along by now?
Well, we'd be more than further, because we had some very exciting players in the Barbados team, along with myself, the maestro Victor Gas-Clark in the midfield, Reggie Haynes, who is my mentor and early coach, Harcourt, Paul Wines, Dudley Downs, and I could continue to call the names. And all we needed in those times is an opportunity. Ricky Williams and Jerry Goddard eventually went to Trinidad to play for a professional team there. But somehow the door was closed and we did not get any further with that. And when you consider Chelsea and Wolves, they were the first two teams that ever came to Barbados from England. And then teams like Southampton and Norwich, et cetera, came. So we could have matched up with them, and surely, if the door was open at that time, Barbados by now would have had endless professionals.
You have served in many capacities, whether in the Barbados Football Association or overseas, and you've always kept yourself very current on the happenings of football. There are a lot of people who, as you know, existed in that era back then, and now they do not really pay a lot of attention to the local game now, but still reserve the right to have an opinion. But I think that yours is much more valid because you've been there, done that, and you're still there doing that. So I say all that to say, up until recently, you were a technical director overseas. I think I will let you mention where, because my memory is escaping me right now. But you served as a technical director. You served as someone to set the policy and the philosophy for a football association. And before we can even talk about professional football in the region or even in Barbados, we need to find someone else for our own association to set that policy. So Keith, first of all, as a former technical advisor to the Barbados Football Association and a former technical director serving overseas, what is the importance of a technical director to setting that philosophy and that policy to a football association to achieve their goals?
Well, you have just said a mouthful. First of all, I'll enlighten you that I was the technical director for Antigua and Barbuda, Anguilla, British Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands. Those were the countries that I performed the role of technical director. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I would never been blessed with that privilege here in Barbados. I have been the technical advisor to the national senior team. But based on my knowledge and my expertise, you have to be able to go into the country, mix with the roots people. Roots meaning you have to understand the culture and the philosophies of the different Caribbean islands. And what I did, as the technical director, I always had someone within that particular country to work alongside of me so that when I move on, they could take over. And I will be appealing to each and everyone to support anyone who has become and given that opportunity to be a local technical director of Barbados football, because it depends on your youth structure. The youth is the key to success, plus also the young ladies coming forward, because you know women's football is very big. Mm-hmm. And once the structure is good and that person guides the other coaches, he has to carry out, let me say, classes and courses for the local coaches to improve. And if the senior team is going to play tiki-tack and they're going to play 5-3-2-1 or 4-3-2-1 or 4-3-3, every single age group must be playing the same, Maitland, so that when they reach the senior team, they're all ready into that. And that is what is going to be important.
What qualities in a technical director should you be looking for? I know there's a lot being made of professional qualifications that the technical director should possess, licenses and badges, etc. What qualities, what inner qualities should they possess?
Well, based on my expertise and my knowledge, when I was pursuing to become a professional coach, I went up to England, first of all, to do their B license at the time. And then I was invited back by the English FA, which was the main place for courses in that time. I went to Bishan Abbey, and then I went on to Lillshaw after they invited me, and I gained my A license. So that at the time was the criteria that you can go any part of the world and coach. Now it is slightly different. You need a CONCACAF license. You need a UEFA license. So my suggestion to any association, not only the BFA, find two or three locals, send them overseas to study along with doing the CONCACAF license so that they would have a knowledge of what it is at a higher level. Mm-hmm. I was blessed. I know you're going to laugh. I went to Southampton first, and then the second time I went up, I went to Chelsea, I went to Tottenham Hotspur, and I went to Queen's Park Rangers. So I had a knowledge of what to do, and I was able to come back and share my expertise with Wales and Beverly Hills, and to a lesser extent, Pines and Notre Dame, who I did late in my career. But you need that kind of exposure at the highest level so that when you come back, you will be respected. And you just cannot coach because you were a good player or because you think you know it. You got to prove it. You got to get results. That is the key to any successful person who is going to be the technical director, etc., etc.
Our good friend Ronaldo Pee Wee Jiltz, I think he declared his hand. He basically told the BFA to choose him, to pick him to do the job. But any candidates that you can think of who you think can do a good job there?
Well, there are a number of persons who I believe has the knowledge and understanding of what they would have to do. But the thing is about that is that the question is, if one of the criteria is to have a CONCACAF B license or a UEFA license, those courses that I have in my mind, they would also have to look and pursue them. As far as young as Ronaldo Previjic is concerned, ironically enough, again, he was one of my students, and he was in the under 17 team when I assisted with the under 17 team, and he see me as his mentor. I know he has a lot of knowledge, but I would advise him, if he wants to reach the top, he should even try to get a UEFA license along with his CONCACAF license. I would prefer at this time not to call the name because I don't want to leave out anyone. But we have a lot of good coaches in Barbados because some of them have worked with me when I conducted programs at the University of the West Indies, etc., etc. But give them a chance to go and do that UEFA license so that when they come back, they have the understanding of what professionalism is, because the technical director has to be capable of taking the country forward, not by just talking, but by action.
So Keith, you're ruling out yourself. You're not putting in your bid for the intentional director.
The only thing I will do, I will have conversation with you, and I must say that I can see young Maitland, and Kwame Paris, who sit beside Trevor Torre and I doing commentary. I can see you all becoming outstanding commentators.
Of course,
but your knowledge of the game is very high. But as far as technical director and coaching is concerned, because of my not being able to be as mobile as before, I will work in any capacity to help with football, but the actual coaching, I won't be able to do that.
Well, Keith, I know that the time has come for you to hang up your coaching boots, but I know that you will still be able to lend of your vast knowledge to the development of football. And of course, that is something that we all appreciate about you. Always have time to chat. You always have time to encourage the guys. And when we at football, everybody always passes by. You say, yeah, coach, we're getting our coach. You know, so that is something that we need in our football community. Have our OGs always ready to give us advice and lend us some experience. So I agree with you. Our new technical director must be someone, hopefully well-traveled and good experience, someone very forthright in their philosophies. And then from there, I think we will see a lot of improvement in our national selection, in our club football, our local game, our women's game as well. And hopefully we move ever closer to having professional football in our region.
Whoever is appointed as the technical director has to work hand in glove or glove in hand, whichever you prefer to put it, with whoever is the coach of the senior national team. And like I tell you just now, it is very important on the 11s, on the 13s, on the 15s, on the 17s, must all be playing the same system, the same style, so that when a player develops into a senior team selection, he just fits right in. That is very, very important that the technical director and the coach of the national senior team work hand in hand.
Correct. Switching regions now. And I know one technical director that is very happy is the technical director over at Paris Saint-Germain. I think his name is Leonardo. You may be familiar with him. Because
yeah, well, by name, not by actually... Knowing him, but he's a lucky man.
But I bet he knows you though, because everybody in football knows you. But Leonardo and PSG just pulled off a big coup this transfer window, signing Lionel Messi. Now, I think this is very important for us to talk about here on Off the Post, because this is the World Class Football Podcast and we have a world class guest, a world class host, and we have to talk about world class players. And Lionel Messi defines what it means to be world class. And in my lifetime, certainly not in yours, maybe, I don't think you would have expected to see Lionel Messi leave Barcelona. But he has, and he's signed for Paris Saint-Germain. How big a deal is that?
Well, Paris Saint-Germain is probably the most fortunate team I've ever known. To have Lionel Messi, Neymar, and young Mbappe in the same squad, defenders will be trembling even before they leave the dressing room. So that is more than a coup by PSG. They're determined to win Champions League. And I would always have the greatest respect for players of that magnitude. And Messi, as God would have it, was able to win the Copa and help him to be even more highly ranked than before. You know I'm a French supporter.
Indeed, but yes,
PSG,
I know.
PSG are blessed with such talent. And don't forget, they have other players in the side, not in the same category as the three you mentioned, but they are also very good players. So I know the world will be looking. And this, if my memory serves me right, 2 days ago I read that they sold a million shirts already for Messi.
Yeah, it's been very, very productive for them signing Lionel Messi. So that's why the big fanfare about players moving clubs and switching clubs, that's why there's such big fanfare, because jerseys sell like hot cakes. They go so quickly when, cause even I was looking for a Messi number 30. so when
you
I order,
gonna wear a Messi number 30?
When I order mine, I never order yours. You wear medium?
I sold a million in a week.
You wear a medium shirt?
If I wear medium?
Yeah, cause when I order mine, I go order another one for you.
You gotta think large.
Large, okay, cool. So I would get a medium and a large. Messi number 30.
Comfortable in large.
Messi number 30.
No problem.
That's what we were giving. Yeah, no problem. So no Arsenal jerseys for you. So switching from PSG now to Arsenal. We have to speak about Arsenal because you hail for Arsenal. You support the Arsenal. But so far this season, not having a good time. 2 8th place finishes, I believe, in last two seasons. No big transfers for this summer so far. What do you think about Arsenal? How are you feeling? How do you think Arsenal's going to do this year?
I'm very disappointed. I watched the game again today, and we created history for the wrong reason. Arsenal have now played 2 matches in the Premiership, have not scored a goal, and don't have 1 point.
Oh, dear.
We are not playing well. Chelsea dominated the game. Lukaku was very impressive. He and James coming down the right side. And Arteta and Edu would have to sit down very quickly and find a way to get Arsenal to function, because the next match coming up is Manchester City. My question marks on Arsenal at the moment, we are exposing a lot of youngsters. But from my knowledge with the soccer game at that level, it is all right to go at the youngsters, but you need some experience. We were down 2-0 today at halftime, and the captain, Aubameyang, did not come on not till like 30 minutes to go. I felt that he should have come on immediately down 2-0 to lift the team. So there are a lot of little question marks. And surely, if City defeats Arsenal next weekend, you can bet that heads would have to rule.
Strong words.
I'm very impressed with Chelsea. And Lukaku look a different player. But he said before the game, which was quite interesting, and I want the young strikers in Barbados to understand this. He said before he went to Italy, he will concentrate mainly on taking out people one-on-one. But he was taught how to hold the ball up, bring the other players into the game. And today he did that with the first goal. He controlled the ball nicely, spread it wide to James. And when James put it in, you and any of your members of staff, including Mike King, could have scored the goal. It was that easy.
The kicker starts. Wow. We are hoping that the English Premier League season is another great one. Arsenal looking to be in some bit of trouble, but the season is long. And hopefully by next year, you can have some good news to report on Arsenal. So before you go, Keith, I just want to mention that the 2021-2022 UEFA Champions League group stage draw will be coming up soon. And on the same day, the award for the 2020-2021 UEFA Men's and Women's Player of the Year will be awarded. Now, these awards were voted for by the 24 coaches who would have coached at the European Championships and 80 coaches who would have competed in the Champions League and the UEFA Europa League last season, as well as 55 select journalists from across Europe. Now, the 3 guys for the UEFA Men's Player of the Year, Kevin De Bruyne from Manchester City, he's also from Belgium, Jorginho from Italy and Chelsea, and his midfield partner N'Golo Kanté from France, your beloved France, Keith, and Chelsea. By extension, we'll mention the managers, those who are up for Manager of the Year, Pep Guardiola from Manchester City, he's also Spanish, Roberto Mancini, the Italian manager of the Italian national team, and Thomas Tuchel, the German manager of Chelsea, who won the Champions League last season. Now, in terms of those players, who do you think, Keith, is fit to win the Men's Player of the Year?
Well, there are 3 very good players. I won't be best because I support France, but I have rated Kanté the best defensive midfield player in the world for quite some time. And I won't change my mind on that. But I could also tell you that De Bruyne, who plays for City and Belgium, is probably the best all-round midfield player. So I have to search my heart a little more. But at the moment, like I said, Kanté is the best defensive midfield player playing in front of back 4. De Bruyne is more versatile, where he can float into corners. He can come through the middle and score goals. Jorginho is a good player, but I think it's going to be come down to Kanté and De Bruyne. But my decision will not be one of bias for France. So next comment, next time, I will tell you who I definitively come up with.
Okay, what about the manager?
The manager, Pep, in my opinion, is the best manager in the world.
So, Keith, we've exhausted the list of topics that we had for today. Time goes so quickly when you talk about football, but I'm sure you will join us again on Off the Post podcast to discuss world-class matters in this game that we love, this beautiful game that we love. So I'm looking forward to that next time. And so until next time, you be good. Thanks a lot, Keith.
Blessings, and thank you for having me as your guest. And blessings to Barbados.
Indeed. So until next time, brothers and sisters, bye-bye, stay safe, and be good. And if you can't be good, be great. And if you can't be great, be grateful. See you later.